on the Feast of Tabernacles.
Thank you so much, brethren, for inviting me to speak. I have not spoken since 2011, so I'm looking forward to delivering my message. As has been announced, my particular portion of this symposium is on the Festival of Tabernacles, also known as Sukkot in Hebrew. And when Brother Byron had sent us the email originally, I actually chose this one because I work at a clinic where at one time our medical director was Orthodox Jewish. And he actually invited me to participate in this ceremony back in 2013. So I have actually been in a modern day Jewish tabernacle that they built as part of their house and was able to participate in that festival. So the actual Festival of Tabernacles also goes by three other names, as shown here on the slide. It's known as the Festival of Booths, as recorded in Leviticus chapter 23, verses 42 and 43. It's referred to as the Festival of Ingathering in Exodus chapter 34, verse 22. And then it's also known as the Festival of Jehovah in Leviticus 23, 39. And then our particular theme text for this symposium is based on Deuteronomy chapter 16, verse 16, but specifically the order of service, as it were, for the Festival of Booths actually begins in verse 13, which says, "The Festival of Booths you should celebrate for yourself 7 days when you make an ingathering from your threshing floor and your oil and wine press. And you must rejoice during your festival, you and your son and your daughter and your manslave and your slave girl and the Levite and the alien resident and the fatherless boy and the widow who are inside your gates. 7 days you will celebrate the festival to Jehovah your God in the place that Jehovah will choose, because Jehovah your God will bless you in all your produce and in every deed of your hand, and you must become nothing but joyful." And then we have the key verse here in verse 16. "Three times in the year, every male of yours should appear before Jehovah your God in the place that he will choose, in the festival of the unfermented cakes, and in the festival of weeks, and in the festival of booths, and none should appear before Jehovah empty-handed. In verse 17, the gift of each one's hand should be a proportion to the blessing of Jehovah your God that he has given you." So, with respect to the observance instructions, as been mentioned already, we've been quoting from, in the other presentations, from Leviticus chapter 23, specifically for the Festival of Booths. It's found in verses 34 through 43. But it's also recorded in Numbers chapter 29, verses 12 through 38, as well as what I just read, Deuteronomy chapter 16, verses 13 through 15. Now, the origins of it are pretty interesting here, because originally it's focusing on the agricultural origins. So that's why it's mentioned here that the origins of the Festival of Tabernacles are both agricultural and historical. So agriculturally, the Festival of Tabernacles is a harvest festival that celebrates the gathering of the harvest, as recorded in Exodus chapter 34, verse 22, which says, "And you will carry on your festival of weeks with the first ripe fruits of the wheat harvest and the festival of ingathering at the turn of the year." Historically, the Festival of Tabernacles commemorates the 40-year period during which the Israelites wandered in the desert, living in temporary shelters known as booths, as recorded in Leviticus chapter 23, verses 42 and 43, verses 42 saying, It is in booths you should dwell 7 days. All the natives in Israel should dwell in the booths," and verse 43, "in order that your generations may know that it was in the booths that I made the sons of Israel to dwell when I was bringing them out of the land of Egypt. I am Jehovah, your God." Now, the other thing that we have to go over here is with regard to the booth construction itself. So, in Leviticus chapter 23, verse 40, the Israelites were commanded to use the boughs of goodly trees, branches of palm trees, and the boughs of thick trees, and the willows of the brook, known as the four species in the construction of the booths. And then there's a slightly different order of the four species in Nehemiah chapter 8, verse 15, where it says, in the days of Ezra, olive branches, pine branches, myrtle branches, palm branches, and branches of fig trees were used to make the booths. This is what has led some commentators to think that the verses were actually referring to what the Israelites were to carry in their hands during the celebration of the festival than what it was actually, the booth was made out of. But it would seem then that we, as you'll see, and as we'll see in this presentation, that that was a later development of them actually carrying representations of the four species in their hands. So here's just a representative diagram that I found on the internet to give an idea of possibly what the booth would have looked like in ancient times during the time of Israel, showing them actually building the booth. The materials themselves were very specific, as I mentioned already, and that if they did not follow those instructions, there were penalties for not doing that. Now, as I mentioned also, I had the privilege of being able to actually be in a modern-day booth. So with regard to the modern-day constructions, the rules are not as strict. So the booth can be constructed of any material, such as wood, canvas, aluminum siding, sheets, etc. In fact, I was talking to the doctor that I share an office with, who's conservative Jewish, and she said that they can order them online now, and they can actually... you know, pick out exactly what they want to make it as easy as possible. The walls can be freestanding or include the sides of a building or porch. The roof, however, must still be of organic material, such as leafy tree overgrowth, mats or palm fronds. And the interior itself usually contains hanging decorations of the four species as well as other attractive artwork. In this latter bullet is what I actually saw in the booth that I was and when I was part of that actual celebration. And here is a representation possibly of a modern booth I found on the internet showing that built it right in their backyard. Now, as already has been mentioned too, is that this particular festival was linked specifically to the agricultural harvest. And so if we look here specifically at this diagram here, you'll notice that it's in the month of Tishrei, which is now the seventh month. After the Exodus, Nisan and Tishrei swapped, because Nisan used to be the seventh month and Tishrei was the first. So after the Exodus, in the sacred calendar, Nisan became the first month and Tishrei became the seventh. So we see there that only 5 days before the Festival of Booths celebration was the Day of Atonement. That was on Tishrei 10. So the Israelites were already in a religious frame of mind, a joyous frame of mind, if you will, when it came time to actually celebrate the Festival of Booths, which lasted for 7 days, Tishrei 15 through Tishrei 21, and then it ended on the 22nd with what has been mentioned already, a holy convocation or a Sabbath-type celebration. It began with a holy convocation on the first day, on the 15th, and it ended with a holy convocation where no work was to be performed on the 22nd of Tishrei. So during this time, according to Leviticus chapter 3, verses 42 through 43, the Israelites were to live in the booths during the 7 days of the festival, eating their meals and sleeping in them. As I mentioned already, the first day was a holy convocation in which no secular work was to be done, and the same was true with the eighth day. The other thing that's been mentioned also when we read the verses in Deuteronomy 16:16 is that all the able-bodied male members of the congregation were not legally exempt from it. Who were not legally exempt from it were to appear in the place of the national sanctuary as on the Passover and Pentecost, meaning they all had to come to Jerusalem. Also in verse 17, which we also read, the Israelites were commanded not to appear before the Lord empty, but everyone shall give as he is able, according to the blessing of the Lord thy God, which he hath given thee. Continuing with the manner of celebration, The number of sacrifices offered during this festival was greater than at any other festival of the year. In addition to the regular daily sacrifice of two male lambs, special sacrifices were prescribed for each day of the festival. The first day included 13 bullocks, two rams, and 14 male lambs for a burnt offering, and one additional kid or goat for a sin offering, along with the appropriate meat and drink offerings of grain and wine, as mentioned in Numbers chapter 29, verses 13 through 16. Now, Alfred Edersheim, in his book, The Temple, actually had some interesting observations with regard to these sacrifices. It says, compared to the Feast of Unleavened Bread, the number of rams and lambs is double. The bullocks number is fivefold. In other words, there were five times more bullocks sacrificed during the Festival of Booths than at the Feast of Unleavened Bread. So it was only 14 during the Passover week and 70 during the Feast of Tabernacles. The number of burnt offerings, whether taking each kind by itself or all of them together, is always divisible by the sacred number 7. 70 bullocks plus 14 rams plus 98 lambs in total during that entire week equals 182 sacrifices, which is divisible by 7, 26 times 7. Also, the meat offerings. 336 tenths of an ephah of flour for the meat offering is 48 times 7. And it mentions here is that in the Feast of Unleavened Bread, the number 7 appears only in its number of days. In the Feast of Pentecost, it's actually the period of its observance, which is 7 times 7 or 49 days after Passover. Whereas the Feast of Tabernacles lasted 7 days, took place on the 7th month when it was at its height, and the number 7 is also impressed in its sacrifices. So that's some interesting details from Alfred Edersheim's book, The Temple. Continuing on, here's another interesting fact. Each day thereafter, the number of bullocks was reduced by 1, until on the last day, the offering was 7 bullocks, 2 rams, and 14 male lambs for a burnt offering, and a kid or goat for a sin offering. On the 8th day, a bullock, a ram, and 7 male lambs were presented as a burnt offering, along with grain and drink offerings, as well as the goat as a sin offering. And in Sabbath years, the law was read to all the people during the festival, as recorded in Deuteronomy chapter 31, verses 10 through 13. Then we had some later developments, as I mentioned earlier. After the Babylonian captivity, the people carrying willow branches in their hands marched around the temple altar of burnt offering once each day, singing, "Save now, we beseech thee, O Jehovah. O Jehovah, we beseech thee, send now prosperity," based on Psalm 118:25. They did that once each day and 7 times on the 7th day. Also daily, a priest brought to the temple a golden vessel filled with water from the pool of Siloam to the chanting of the words of Isaiah chapter 12, verse 3. Therefore, with joy shall ye draw water out of the wells of salvation. And then this would be mixed with sacrificial wine, and the water was then poured into a basin that led to the base of the altar, which then flowed down to the Kidron Valley. It was also during this festival that Jesus stood up and offered himself as the water of life, saying, "If any man thirst, let him come unto me and drink. He that believeth on me, as the scripture hath said, from within him shall flow rivers of living water," based on John chapter 7, verses 37 and 38. And this was apparently in reference to the custom of pouring out a drink offering of water during the festival, thereby impressing upon those assembled that what he was saying was shocking, to say the least, and drew their attention. Other later developments is at the close of the 5th of Tishri and the beginning of the 16th, and for the 5 succeeding nights, immense lamps were lit atop 2 lofty pillars that had been erected in the court of the women. Meanwhile, on the steps of the temple court, Levites sang psalms accompanied by instrumental music. Okay. So, once again, Alfred Edersheim, in his book, The Temple, quotes from the Mishnah, which records which psalms were sung. So day 1, it was Psalm 105, day 2, Psalm 29, Day 3, Psalm 50 from verse 16 onward. Day 4, Psalm 94 from verse 16. Day 5, Psalm 94 from verse 8. Day 6, Psalm 81 from verse 6. And day 7, Psalm 82 from verse 5. And here is a painting that is from the Temple Institute in Jerusalem. And this is representative of the festive water offering to give you an idea of those fires that were lit atop those pillars in the court of the women, as you can see the women gathered there in the picture. Well, what about its antitypical significance? Interestingly enough, in Zechariah chapter 14, verses 16 through 19, the Feast of Tabernacles is the only one of the three that is mentioned as being observed in the Kingdom Age. So if we take a look at that quickly, Zechariah chapter 14, verses 16 through 19, it says, "And it must occur that as regards everyone who is left remaining out of all the nations that are coming against Jerusalem, they must also go up from year to year to bow down to the king, Jehovah of armies, and to celebrate the festival of the booths. And it must occur that as regards anyone that does not come up out of the families of the earth to Jerusalem to bow down to the king, Jehovah of armies, even upon them no pouring rain will occur. And if the family of Egypt itself does not come up and does not actually enter, upon them also there shall be none. The scourge will occur with which Jehovah scourges the nations that do not come up to celebrate the festival of booths." So the answer to the question is, well, why is this particular festival the one that is that we are told that in the Kingdom Age the Gentiles, or the world of mankind, are going to have to celebrate? Well, the answer is, it's the only one that currently is unfulfilled typically. And it's the only one which will be in process of fulfillment by the kingdom itself. So if we continue on, we'll see how that is. This is taken from Jameson Fawcett Brown's commentary on these particular verses. It says, "The Feast of Tabernacles will be commemorative of the Jews' sojourn not merely 40 years in the wilderness, but for almost 2,000 years of their dispersion. To the Gentile, it will be significant of perfected salvation after past wanderings in a moral wilderness, as it originally commemorated the ingathering of the harvest." And then in his commentary, he quotes from another commentator by the name of Thomas Verner Moore, "The seed time of tears shall then have issued in the harvest of joy," which I thought was very quaint, very appropriate way of putting that. Some other antitypical significance, as we are already familiar with. Israel typifies the world of mankind during the millennium and ages to come. The bullocks of the burnt offering are typical of the priesthood, head and body, who are dedicated to doing the will of God. The rams and lambs of the burnt offering are representative of the church, which follows the Lamb Jesus whithersoever he goes. And then quoting from Tabernacle Shadows, page 94, "The burnt offerings, being free will offerings, represent the love and appreciation of mankind for what God has done for them. They show this love and appreciation through consecration. Consecration will be required of mankind during the millennium." And then Brother Fry also, in his book Notes on the Tabernacle, offers some other possible antitypical significance. The decreasing of the number of bullocks offered on each day demonstrates the change in love from being one of exuberance at the beginning to a more sedate behavior by the end. The fact that the number of rams and lambs remain unchanged throughout reflects the deeper aspects of love and appreciation which continue onward despite trials and tribulations. The death of mankind's bullocks during the millennium will signify the completeness of their consecration, as opposed to that of the churches, which represents the death of their humanity. Continuing on, "The rams and lambs may also represent the lamb-like disposition of meekness and lowliness that will be demonstrated by mankind during the millennium." And in harmony with this is a quote from John chapter 10, verse 16, "Other sheep I have which are not of this fold, them also I must bring, and they shall hear my voice, and there shall be one fold and one shepherd." Now to conclude, and this is something that I was not aware of, some of the sources I actually consulted were Jewish, and they actually made a linkage between the United States Thanksgiving celebration, as originally done, as along with the Festival of Booths. because some historians have pointed out that the original Thanksgiving holiday in the U.S. had many similarities because the pilgrims were very religious. They didn't do anything by chance. They held the Bible in high regard. We know that the first Thanksgiving occurred during the fall of 1621. Historians speculate that this celebration occurred sometime between September 21st and November 9th, but most likely in early October, around the time of the Feast of Tabernacles. Like the ancient Israelites, who lived for a week in temporary huts while giving thanks for a plentiful harvest, during their first winter in Massachusetts, the pilgrims dwelt in makeshift huts known as wigwams that the Indians helped them build. And it says, while the Feast of Tabernacles was a seven-day observance, the first Thanksgiving celebration lasted for 3 days, as opposed to the one-day celebration that we have nowadays. That last portion was something that I was not aware of, that it was actually a longer celebration, which was more in keeping with the length of the Jewish celebrations. And then here's just a representative picture I found with regard to Thanksgiving. So I was also asked to provide the concluding hymn. And so what I chose and what we'll be singing today is a traditional hymn that many families sing during Thanksgiving, and it's actually taken from the United Methodist hymnal. It's called We Gather Together.